I'd like to start off by recognizing a long-term state employee, 21 years of service to the great Department of General Services, Kathy Marzola. She didn't know we were going to do this. This is a customer service award for Kathy, who manages the day-to-day operations of email and marketplace, working with approximately 300 agency, state agencies and local organizations, taking and dealing with 60,000 vendors, taking over 1,300 calls a year from confused individuals. And since the governor's customer service initiative was introduced, she's received 20 superior accommodations, and during a period of medical leave, she actually called back in and volunteered to make sure that her colleagues were aware of how to run the shop. So if Kathy can come up. Celebrated a marriage anniversary. I have a mere 32 years.
Oh, you're a kid.
Yeah. We're still newlyweds.
I was married at the age of 5.
Those arranged marriages.
Actually, it was, sort of. But it worked. But thank you. Yes, we just returned from a trip out of town celebrating our 50th anniversary, which is remarkable. I have a very, very patient, kind, understanding husband. I can't imagine being such a good person myself as he is. But it's very
Come
good.
On, can't
very
be good. All, it can't be all you and all him. I mean,
it's all him.
You're patient too. He makes few mistakes.
Well, I will tell you, one of the keys to, Peter knows this, our great relationship, my husband and I, is that he worked for 45 years for the federal government and was covered by the Hatch Act. So he couldn't go to any political events with me.
Oh.
And that works.
That would help in my relationship, no. In my marriage.
It is very good to be back. And we spent 2 weeks in Japan. I got back midnight Monday night. Sort of.
Sort
Part of.
Of
me got back. The rest will be coming along soon, I'm sure. Thank you.
Tokyo, Kyoto.
Well, actually, since you asked, we flew into Kyoto and took a boat down the inland sea and then up the west coast of Japan and a day in Korea and then up to the north of Japan to Sapporo. where the Olympics were.
Yeah.
And so that way we're able to see small towns and archaeological sites, which we're very interested in. Off the coast that you wouldn't normally see otherwise. You couldn't get access to except by water. It was a trip of a lifetime.
Sapporo, great beer named after.
Well, I was going to tell the comptroller and the deputy comptroller. We actually visited a craft brewery, and it was very good, but it wasn't like Maryland beer.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor and Madam Treasurer. And Madam Treasurer, you don't look a day over 55. I agree with. And thank you for not only coming back at midnight on Monday, but chairing a 6.5-hour meeting that Secretary Brinkley and I were made it through somehow, but you particularly coming back all that long distance.
Autopilot's
so great. Anyway, I wanted to just note for the record, the William Donald Schaefer Helping People Award is something that I created to honor the legacy of the four-term mayor of Baltimore, and two-term governor, and two-term comptroller. I kid people and say he had absolutely no use for me, because I ran against him, but I recognize that he is the Babe Ruth of Maryland politics, represents the greatest generation, World War II, always believed in customer service, although he had a rather abrupt way of delivering customer service sometimes, but overall just an icon of Maryland politics. And I created this award and called it the William Donald Schaefer Helping People Award because he was always known for focusing on the little person and trying to make government work for the little guy. And, people say, what do you want up in Baltimore City these days? I'd say I'd love to get the trash picked up and the potholes fixed and maybe take care of some of the other problems that are affecting the daily life of people in Baltimore. And I almost feel like I'm channeling William Donald Schaefer because his type of leadership is in short supply up right now in some areas of the state. But these ceremonies where I present these awards to Marylanders always serve as a heartening reminder of the very best of Maryland and of the incredible people all over the state who so selflessly give back to their communities and play an instrumental role in making Maryland such a great place to live. And they rarely get any recognition. These events are without a doubt a highlight of my job as comptroller. Last Friday in Salisbury, down on the Lower Shore, I experienced one of the most poignant Schaefer Awards of the past 7 years. I had the distinct privilege of posthumously presenting the Schaefer Award to Officer Aaron Bull Hudson, a longtime beloved Salisbury police officer known for his big loving hugs and radiant enthusiasm for the community. For 27 years, he served the people he loved, doing the work he loved. He exemplified what it meant to truly serve the public, not just fulfilling a job title, but going far above and beyond to nurture meaningful relationships and build trust within the community. You could often find Bull, as he was known, since he was about 6'8" and very large and rambunctious individual. You could always find him at Salisbury's legendary Third Fridays or at the National Night Out, where he generously doled out hugs at his, apparently he would set up a station at these huge festivals, and it was called the Hug a Bull Station. And he would give anybody who needed or didn't need a hug, including the mayor frequently, the mayor told me. But even in his absence, the love Salisbury nurtures for Bull is tangible in so many parts of the community. From the street now named Boulevard in the middle of Salisbury in his honor, or simply in the culture of love and respect he inspired in each person he met. Ceremony was deeply emotional for me and the hundreds of Salisbury citizens who turned out and his family, son and his daughter. It was an honor to recognize one great public service icon in the name of another, William Donald Schaefer. In the spirit of this commitment to service, it's my hope as we begin today's meeting that we do so with the heartfelt reminder of why we get together at these meetings and why we try to work together in order to benefit the state. It's an award that's in recognition of all Marylanders from Cumberland to Baltimore who, through all my decades in government, continue to inspire me in their volunteerism and the altruism of their service. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very good. I had the opportunity last night to attend the Carroll County vigil for those who had been lost to opioid and heroin overdoses. This was the fifth time they've done a fifth annual event. Brian DiLeonardo, the state's attorney, puts on this event. It's primarily families who have lost someone due to this epidemic, and it was quite moving, the reading of the names of individuals who passed over the last several years. One parent spoke, and he asked people to stand if they had lost a family member in the last 20 years, and then it was the last 10 to 20 years, and then the last 5 to 10 years, and 3 to 5 years, and it was just so many people that were standing at times that reminded us of how much of a scourge this is, and it's a continuing epidemic that we have to fight and fight every day. And so just wanted to mention that. Madam Secretary?
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 11 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. There are 4 reports of emergency procurements. We are going to withdraw the reports numbered A2 and A3 and bring them back after we have a chance to go over them more. So we are ready on the rest of the agenda for your questions.
Comptroller?
Item A1.
A1 is the emergency contract with the Charlotte Hall Veterans Home. I don't know if Mr. Lomboy, Mr. Secretary Churchill is going to take this, or you'd have somebody from...
I can take it, as well as Lauren Buckler, Assistant Secretary.
Okay.
Construction.
Right. Obviously, I don't have any problem with it. It's an emergency. Well, I do, but I'd like to... I am going to end up voting for it. This is an emergency procurement for Charlotte Hall, the veterans' home. To replace, I take it, elevators?
That's correct.
And obviously everybody wants the best for Charlotte Hall's residents, and I've been there several times, and I appreciate the services and the amenities that we in the state provide for these veterans. But I wanted to inquire about the decision to designate this procurement as an emergency contract, since according to the background materials, the department was aware of the deteriorating conditions of the elevators as early as 2016. Last month at a previous board meeting, we took note of an emergency procurement designation for vending machines at a roadside rest area. And we urged caution about misusing that designation to bypass the traditional procurement process. Since this has been known for several years, I'm wondering how you designated it as an emergency.
So, for the record, I'm Lauren Buckler, Assistant Secretary for Design and Construction for the Department of General Services. The department was aware that the elevators were past their useful life. We were aware that they needed to be replaced. We'd been working on putting funding together, putting them into the process, the state process, to get that replacement done. Recently, the failures have been too severe for parts. The elevators are too old for them to get the parts, and it's an emergency at this point because we can't have them go down and not have medical services to the residents of this facility, not have food to the residents of this facility. The residents are unable to use stairs in some cases to be able to get them out in an emergency. We needed to have that. So at this point, it's become an emergency because we can't make the repairs until we could fix it in a normal course of business.
I really feel like I'm channeling the treasurer here a little bit, because this is one of her issues that we need to monitor more closely and get these items removed. I happen to think of an emergency procurement as an item three items later, item A4, which is coming up. What is that emergency procurement for? That's stabilizing a slope adjacent to I-68 in Allegheny County after a landslide. that's an emergency procurement. And so I'm not suggesting any thing concerning you guys individually. I'm just saying that it sounds like on this one we dropped the ball. And as you said, there was a cascading problem with maintenance. Mm-hmm. All I'm suggesting is that I hope the emergency procurement does not provide a alternative to proper oversight of equipment. Mr. Churchill.
Thank you for those comments, Mr. Comptroller. We would agree. This is an unusual circumstance. We deliberated about at length, and unfortunately we could not bring it during the normal course of business, which it had been planned, and because of the issues that were at hand. But you are correct, and we are working toward greater planning, greater forecasting of our maintenance needs, and we've been trying to engage in that endeavor with all departments for the last year. So, and we'll continue to do so. But I do recognize your concern.
Madam Treasurer, I didn't mean to get on your turf, but this is something you've paid a lot of attention to.
It is something that we're all concerned about, maintenance and emergency maintenance. And I understand, in fact, it was in the process as early as fiscal 2017. But was not funded at that point. I appreciate that this is a very unusual circumstance.
It is an unusual circumstance.
And we're getting the system in place.
I don't want to take up the time at this meeting, but I'm happy to report that the executive departments are in work group, have been so for last quarter of last year, to discuss and put together plans for proper planning of our facilities in the future. So we don't have anything to report at this point, but we are moving toward a unified and cohesive system amongst all the departments. So.
Okay. Is that going to be electronic, where the building managers will report what's going on in the buildings?
Currently, the departments are evaluating and determining what is in the best interest for the state for all the departments to work together. So we're evaluating systems, and we'll have some recommendations for consideration. DVM is at the table along with us. And so there's nothing to report now, but I'm positive about the future of what will happen with our facilities.
I think it's clear there is a consensus that putting the money in up front when you can anticipate that it's going to be needed saves money down the road.
Right.
And the question is the system for feeding in awareness of problems beyond simply knowing what's out there and what the lifespan of our systems are and where they are in that lifespan. And then it's up to us all to make sure the funding is there to be able to implement the system.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Speaking in my old job at General Services, the challenge was always, the funding aspects of it. What often would happen, and decisions were made outside of the department, you put forward what you need for maintenance and what you need to replace, and the various sausage-making process and hands that it goes through, maintenance often gets overlooked. And I remember testifying before one of the committees and telling the subcommittee chair, you folks don't go out to, a replacement of a HVAC. You go to opening a new building. You don't go out when we need to put a roof on a new building. You like to go and cut a ribbon or dig a hole or something of that nature. So that tends to be one of the challenges that is faced with all maintenance. And it's at the federal level as well. It's probably even worse at the federal level.
But you can always put a ribbon almost anywhere and come in.
Yeah, it's true, but you don't get the folks out there. They don't see it that way when they're line item mount something in the budget, so.
Thank you.
Anything else on the Secretary's agenda?
Just to point out that item 11, we had a very good sale. The head of debt management for the state is sitting there, Mr. Vaughn, who could tell you, I'm not suggesting that he do, but we got an interest rate of 2.28, which is very good, lower than the last sale, because people know good investments when they see them.
I would move approval of the agenda.
Okay. I think we're all in favor. Thank you. Department of Natural Resources.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Emily Wilson with the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 7 items on our real property agenda today for your consideration. Be happy to try to answer any questions. Thank you.
I don't have any questions. I will mention that I've made it a mission of mine to visit every park in the state.
Great.
And so I'm on my way. I have to schedule the next couple of visits.
So that's great to hear.
Schedule now. So nothing on
move approval.
Okay.
Second.
All right. We're all in favor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wilson. Budget and management.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. I'm David Brinkley, the Secretary of the Department of Budget and Management. We've brought 6 items for your consideration. I'm withdrawing item 6, so you have 5 for your consideration. I have people here to address any concerns or questions you might have.
Comptroller, Madam Treasurer.
I could just comment on item 4. Is Mr. Dembro here?
Yes. Good morning. Konnichiwa, Madam Treasurer.
May it please the board, my name is Dan Dembro, Director of Procurement for the Department of Health. With me on this item today is the Deputy Secretary of the Developmental Disabilities Administration, Bernie Simons, as well as the Director of Fiscal Services of the Developmental Disabilities Administration, that is Valerie Rodden.
Thank you all for being here. Obviously, this is a very important service. It should not be disrupted. But I do have concerns about the amount of time it's taking to conduct a competitive procurement in this space. Is that something you can help us with?
If I may begin the response, and then I'll turn it over to the experts at DDA if there's additional information needed. We did this RFP before, and we got 4 proposals. But when they were reviewed for technical evaluation, not one single one of them showed that they were able to deliver the services that were needed. Nobody provided a step-by-step specific indication of how they would provide these behavioral support services. As a result, we rejected all proposals, canceled the RFP, started over. After we started over, the clinical director of DDA resigned, so we had to start over a third time. We are now completing the RFP that will replace this vendor, and that is now being reviewed by the Department of Budget and Management. We expect to have it on the street next month.
Excellent, and I have a great deal of confidence in you, Mr. Dembro, and also your folks. Maybe they could give you a bonus if, in fact, it is a competitive procurement that you can bring to us, because the prices are going up very quickly, I see.
And this one, we got the vendor to maintain current pricing.
Yes.
While this is extended as we conduct and complete the ongoing procurement. It's kind of you to recognize our work. Thank you.
Oh, good. Did the volume increase, or what is the...
Yes, sir, it did. The most expensive service within this contract is behavioral respite, and we have, in July of this fiscal year, we were serving 11 people. We are currently, in March, we're serving 20. So it did double, so it did increase. And because of the ebb and flow on when people need services, you can't always time it, but it was a significant increase. And we are working on this clinically to try to address the issue and get these folks transitioned back into the community.
Very important service. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, sir.
I'd move approval.
Thank you. So we have a motion.
I would move approval on the agenda.
Okay. Second. Okay. Yeah. University System.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 5 items on the agenda. Here to answer any questions.
I have a question on 3. This is the Patterson Wing 2 mechanical room.
I'd like to bring up Bill Olin, who is the Director of Design and Construction at the University of Maryland College Park.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning.
Madam Treasurer. Comptroller Brancho. Good morning. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Hey, please identify yourself.
Bill Olin, Executive Director of Planning and Construction, University of Maryland Service Center.
Okay. The project scope on this changed, which essentially doubled the price.
Yes, it did.
You know, my initial thought would be that you redid when you... You know, when it comes up twice the original amount, why did the project scope change, and then why was it not, you know, put out on the street?
So 2 answers. 1, the project scope originated as replacement of a 25-year-old chiller that was in the basement of H.A. Patterson Building that also supplied air conditioning to an adjacent academic building, Jimenez Hall, and also the University Health Center, 24/7 operation times of the year. So when the design started, we were trying to figure out how to reduce the outage time to those 3 buildings, and incredibly sensitive to the University Health Center. So a decision was made to build an adjacent mechanical room next to the existing one, where the existing equipment would stay in place, we could remove it. And we've had some failures with this chiller that has left the Health Center without air conditioning last summer for a couple weeks. So we were very, you know, we needed to get this done quick. So when we... That was the first change in scope. So that added quite a few dollars to building a second system while the existing one was operating.
So, wait a minute. You're saying that's the first change. What was the original scope? It was to replace the existing?
Yes, sir.
So, but no one thought that replacing the existing meant that you're going to have to take it offline for some period of time?
We didn't look at that during the original budget process until the designers were on board, and we looked at how we would do that from a constructability standpoint. And this job is being managed by a construction manager, one of our on-call construction managers. So we looked at, could we bring in temporary chillers? Where would we put them? Noise with them outside, potential safety issues with running temporary chill water piping and temporary electric around that site. It is in the heart of campus, right across from the student union, and less than 50 feet from the academic building, about 75 feet from the Health Center. So we went back and forth looking at ways to do this without having to do this addition and put the adjacent room. But, you know, it's an active building. It's a large building with a lot of different departments in there, teaching labs, the international programs for the campus are on the other wing, and then the two other buildings. So we looked at trying to figure out how to do this. And the cost of temporary chillers, bringing that in, generators for the chillers, all that for year-round, and then also the heating. The plan was to strip everything out of the existing mechanical room and, you know, put it all back in, new pads, new electric gear, pumps, so forth, all the secondary systems. So it was a really complicated while an occupied building is in place to do this.
Okay. I'm not the engineer, but I would have thought that if you're going to replace something and you know it has to operate, that you would say we're going to have to build separately right in the very beginning, you know, or at least say we have to have some plan right in the very beginning. Okay, so that was the first change. What was the second change?
So the adjacent to the mechanic room is a large lecture hall, been as old as the building, over 50 years, and the lecture hall hasn't had a renovation. There's an air handler that supplied conditioned air to that lecture hall. That was original equipment. It was in failure mode. You know, it was operating, but the drip pans on it were failing. They were having mold issues with condensate. So the intent is, if we're going to do this heavy mechanic work in the building, mechanical subcontractors on site, we would replace the air handler at the same time. So time to do it is during the summer when there's less demand for this size classroom. I think it's 150 seat or so. Classroom. Once again, part of campus, heavily used classroom.
Okay. All right. Okay. It just, okay. I mean, we are where we are, but it just seems so.
So you're
a little bit better planning, or, and then I guess the second phase is that since you had them on campus, you weren't going to go back and rebid the process.
So everything was bid competitively to the market. We got multiple bids from all the subcontractors. The mechanical portion of the project was the biggest subcontractor bid. So the construction manager, J. Vincent Schaefer, Maryland firm, went out and bid the entire project with alternates to the market. We got competitive pricing. I was very happy with it. As tight as the market is right now, that we got over five mechanical bidders, subcontractors, put prices on it. So everything was competitively bid.
Okay. I don't want to channel the controller here.
Welcome to the club.
But in this case, I'm not, you know, negative on construction management, but in this case, it does make you wonder, because the construction, the manager, the CM, you know, there's no disadvantage to the CM in this change of scope or rebidding process, because he or she is there. I would have hoped that construction manager, as they're advising early on, could have said, you know, it's not going to work this way. We're going to have to put another facility in here. It's going to cost you X, and he or she gets paid regardless.
They were part of it after we awarded the contract. We didn't ask them prior to the award to the CM, which was competitively bid. The CMs were competitively bid. We didn't ask them during that process of awarding to the CMs to look at the project to see if it was doable. That was something that when the project was started, we should have taken a harder look at. That was a university. It was not the CM. I'm not trying to defend the CM in this case, but that was a, you know, replacing a chiller, trying to keep all the systems up, the buildings occupied, and then these other things. As facilities renewal dollars became available, the maintenance folks on campus said, well, if we're going to do this and disrupt everyone, we might as well try and do this too. So it made sense, since we're having that much disruption, to do it all at once.
Okay.
But I would agree with you, sir, that we should have looked at it and known that this was going to be a bigger bread box when we started.
Do we get the – we don't get the bids. I was looking at you, Mark. We don't get the bids for the subcontracting and CMs.
Not in this matter, Mark.
Okay.
You get a bid package report.
Okay. We have all that. We can
– they have it, and the stadium does the same thing. I mean,
yeah.
But I do think they would produce it if you asked for it in detail, but we don't have it in our record at this point.
Okay.
If I'm making progress with the Lieutenant Governor, you can come back anytime, because this to me is very often just a 15% add-on for the taxpayers, and I wish the university would continue its focus on trying to transition to design, bid, build, which is what Secretary Churchill does almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made that argument, and I'm delighted that the Lieutenant Governor picked up on that, and he obviously has the expertise to see something like this that probably is costing the taxpayers quite a bit more money.
Yeah. I mean, I agree, and particularly in this one where you only have one bid package, you're not separating it out, that this could have been done.
I think almost 12 different bid packages that went out. I'm looking for a summary.
On this particular project?
On this project. So we bid mechanical, electrical. I don't have the summary sheet in front of me.
There's an under bid package description. General trade, selected demolition site.
Yeah, so there were about a dozen different bid packages.
Okay.
So we bid to the subcontractor market. It wasn't to one bidder. So the mechanical contractor is different than the electrical bids. They did it. Those bids, when we have the CMs advertised, they advertise on email and marketplace to try and get as much participation as possible. We also do outreach with Minority Affairs to try and increase our MBE participation where possible.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Move approval.
Okay. I guess I can second it.
Is it?
We're all in chamber?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Department of Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Mike Leahy, Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we have seven items on the agenda, and we are withdrawing item 7IT, which was supplemental. and I have representatives available to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, I have a question on item number one. Is there anyone from the comptroller's office here?
We've talked about it.
Is that the sole source?
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. My name is David Hildebrand. I'm the Director of Risk Management for the Office of the Comptroller, and with me is John Heider, who is the Director of Information Technology.
Okay. This is recovery, disaster recovery services?
Yes, sir.
I mean, there are a number of entities that provide this service. Why did we go with just one?
There's a very limited number that provide the level of services that we need for mainframe systems. And because the tax system and the other 64 agencies that we support with the Annapolis Data Center require those mainframe services, we had to look at a very limited pool. Uh-huh. One of the other providers that we had previously used and looked at, we were aware at the time we were doing this, was about to declare bankruptcy. Uh-huh. So that left us with one provider with a Tier 3 or 4 facility in the state of Maryland that met our needs. That was the one we were already using.
It has to be in the state of Maryland?
We prefer the, as far as location, that we can get to this facility and begin operations, but that it's far enough away from our now Baltimore location. So that was one part of it. The other is...
But how about if you have a grid failure or something of that nature or a massive storm? I worked at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and this is the reason I really bring it up, not to poke you. I worked at the University...
I've already poked them,
US,
so...
Department of Agriculture, and during Katrina, our National Finance Center, which does the check processing and finance and payment systems, not only for USDA but for other agencies, is in New Orleans. And they used the backup to make sure it wasn't in Louisiana because storms and things of that nature might hit, and they use a group called SunGar. I'm not advocating for them, but no one lost a paycheck. Nothing happened, even though, you know, there was substantial damage to the facility there. And they were running, this was several years ago, so they were running mainframes as well.
Yes,
I guess the follow-up question, when are you guys going to get rid of those 370 IBM computers anyway? Well, not to put down IBM out there.
We're not running 370, but mandate is to get off the mainframe. But
yeah.
In the interim, we do have the duty to keep what is running, running.
Yeah.
And that's our goal.
Okay. All right. So there was only one group that could do this?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The one you had previously mentioned is the one that just declared bankruptcy. So no longer an option.
Really? SunGar's out. Okay.
Chapter 11 right now.
They're in Chapter
11. Now, so that's greatly limited. Then again, meeting that level, that Tier 3 or Tier 4, because it is so critical to the state, we were not willing to go with the Tier 2 facility.
Okay. That was my question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I knew you withdrew 7IT, but I have a question and something to think about as you go forward, because I think the time is starting to run on this contract. Is there any effort underway to rebid this contract?
Yes, Mr. Governor. The procurement folks at DeWitt are building the RFP as we speak, and we are also beginning discussions with NIC to deal with the interim, because this contract does end in August, and we do not expect to have a new vendor in place by the end of this contract.
Okay. Is that the government?
Yes.
Can we expect to see the audit pretty soon?
The difficulty that we face presently is that we have provided all of the audited statements, and the request for particular audits down to the actual transaction level records were not kept to that level. So we had attempted to schedule a meeting with all of the interested parties, your staff, DPW staff, governor staff, and comptroller staff. and have had significant difficulty scheduling that. As this matter has been withdrawn today, in the hopes that we can find other ways to procure some of this information, I am still attempting to gather it, but the difficulty we face is that this was not kept in the normal course of their business, and we're trying to figure out how to recreate it.
I know there have been several meetings. I'm sure another meeting would be very helpful.
I think we're available, Madam Treasurer. We're available.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on IT? Or?
No. Move approval.
Okay. All right. We're all in favor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Governor. For the record, my name is Jim Forge, Deputy Secretary, Maryland Department of Transportation. We have 30 items to present today, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I have a question/comment on 6M, Maryland Aviation Administration.
Small business preference.
Good morning,
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Controller.
Introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Ricky Smith, Executive Director of the Maryland Aviation Administration. I don't normally sound this way. But.
Okay. Well, first of all, I wanted to commend that you're utilizing the Small Business Reserve Program for this. I do question P. Flanagan and Sons. They're big. Construction company that's done a lot of business with transportation. Are they a certified small business? Has anyone checked
into
that?
No, they're not.
Good morning, Linda Dangerfield, Director, Office of Procurement for Maryland Aviation Administration. This procurement method was a small business preference, not a reserve, so P. Flanagan was able to actually participate in its procurement. And the reason we made it a preference instead of a reserve because it wasn't many small businesses to do it, but since there were like two out there, we decided to make it a preference in case a small business did bid, if they come up from the percentage, we could avoid the contract, which is what happened with Eastern Excavating.
Okay, so Eastern is a small business.
Yes.
Okay, so I got confused. I read it quickly. It's preference versus the reserve. Okay, because it threw me off when I saw Flanagan there. So I know these guys. Okay, all right. I did see. You're going to say the same thing about Flanagan? Okay. All right, I think that's for the airport. That's fine. I will point out the port is utilizing the reserve program. I'm glad to see that. And for the other secretaries and procurement people around, we'd like to see you all utilizing the Small Business Reserve Program a lot more. We're not really seeing that, and I am very concerned. So you'll hear from me on those things. I want to...
Lieutenant Governor, just for the record, I just want all of our procurement people to hear that, because when we had our pre-meeting the other day, I mentioned that the Lieutenant Governor was going to bring this up. Because I know you're so focused on it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to hear you doing that.
Okay. And I want to commend State Highway. They mentioned Small Business Enterprise. They didn't put the Maintenance 29M, I don't think, was in the Small Business Reserve. But it appears that it could have been 29M, possibly 28. Is someone from State Highway here? Jim, do you have anyone from State Highway?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Sure.
Hi.
Jada.
Jada Wright, Procurement Director for State Highway Administration.
Okay. When I look at 28M, 29M, and maybe 27, I have to just, and 27M, it's the same contractors that bid on these different packages. One of them was awarded to a small business enterprise. The other one was awarded to an MBE, which may very well also be a small business. Just the thought process that all three of these bids could projects could have been put into, and throw 26 in there, all of them could have been put into the Small Business Reserve Program.
Yes.
It's something to think about as you go forward, that these projects can be done that way. I'll throw in 25 as well. So you got 25 through 29 had the same contractors involved, and two of the awards went to small businesses, at least two of the awards, and possibly all four.
We have taken note of that, and we'll be sure to designate those where we can in the future.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Now, we'll also say, though, for the record, Lieutenant Governor, some of these areas, like Washington counties and Garrett and stuff, we had significant problems getting people to
bid. Yeah, no, I know. Outer counties.
So we try to open it up to get more bids.
Right.
And so we're still playing with that. But as you can see, we're trying to go to the Small Business Reserve and the Small Business Preference as we go towards that goal.
Okay. No, appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Oh.
Big book.
Yes. I had one item.
Yes.
On item 16C.
Oh, man.
Oh, North Avenue Rising?
Yeah, no, this caught my eye, Deputy Secretary. This is a $9.7 million contract for streetscape improvements along the entirety of North Avenue in Baltimore City. Mm-hmm. The agenda item briefing us said that it was part of a joint venture, quote, joint venture between MTA and the City of Baltimore, Department of Transportation, to increase transit and economic development opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
That strikes me as a unique and very good news story for the citizens of Baltimore. I commend the administration for doing this. I just wanted to find out whether this project and possibly future similar projects, how are they coming about?
So if I'm not mistaken, I think this was a grant that we put in for the federal government. I believe it's around $27 million total. The state has nearly
15C also. That's part of the North Avenue Rising.
North Avenue Rising, that's correct. That's exactly right. And so we have about nearly 50%, maybe a little bit over 50% of those funds from transportation, close to the other 50% from the federal government, and $1 million from Baltimore City, I believe it is. Is that?
Yes, that's correct. I'm Holly Arnold. I'm the Deputy Administrator and Chief Planning Program and Engineering Officer at MDOT-MTA. Jim's correct. It's a TIGRE grant, so it's Transportation Infrastructure Generating Economic Recovery, that we were awarded, in 2017 in a joint partnership with Baltimore City Department of Transportation. So we're very excited about it.
Excellent.
Yes.
Because I'm going to be up in on North Avenue, it turns out, today, touring the Great Flax and Wax Museum, urging everybody during the Memorial Day weekend to come down and visit. It's a staycation, stay and visit Baltimore. So I'll go to the Babe Ruth Museum and the Visionary Arts Museum. But then I'm up on East North Avenue, and kudos to all of you for figuring out how we can move forward in a positive way.
Yeah, it's great news, and Great Flax and Wax was a good partner with us throughout this, and we'll have a dedicated lane in front of their business in a couple years.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you very much. And, hats off to the governor and the lieutenant governor, and let me also just say it's such a pleasure to have the lieutenant governor here, because these boring subjects, these non-controversial boring subjects, he shares my passion for some of this procurement. Activity.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks,
and just on the North Avenue, part of our opportunity zone as well as Project Core is looking at what can be done on North Avenue. And typically what has happened, not just in our administration, but in previous and with the city, there have been economic development efforts that are spotty in terms of they're one location at a time, and it's one spot, this spot, and so you have these little oases that sit out there, but there's not a full comprehensive approach. And so one of the things that we're doing with the Opportunity Zone Leadership Task Force, and it combines with Project CORE, is to work on the whole corridor, the North Avenue corridor, along with North Avenue Rising through the transportation and the Tiger Grants, that you're looking at what is happening from Hilton Street, you know, down to MICA and everything in between, that we're not just looking, you know, one spot. We're working at the Walbrook Lumberyard, where it's an opportunity zone and Project Core efforts, but also Penn North, which is in this 15C item, and, like I said, going from Hilton all the way down to make sure that that corridor is inviting, because it is a gateway to the city as well. So thank you. Any other questions on transportation?
Move approval.
Any second? Okay. And on favor, DGS.
Good morning. Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. The department has 34 items on our agenda. We are withdrawing item 19, and we have agency representation available to answer any questions you have at this time.
I don't have any questions. I'd say to General Services, but also to the other agencies here, please explore utilizing the Small Business Reserve Program. These businesses can do the work, and I know that it takes sometimes a little bit of market research on the part of your contracting officers, procurement professionals, to see who can do the work. As was mentioned, in some areas of the state where it may be a little tougher, but encourage you to utilize that, utilize the reserve program.
Governor, thank you for that. Yes, we will continue to do that. Many of our SBR contracts are under the threshold, so they don't rise up to the Board of Public Works. As a matter of fact, it's almost all exclusive SBR for our smaller contracts, and we also look at our guard service with using the SBR program. I would make a note. Outside of this, we were very proud of item two, the Cumberland Barracks, which is out in Western Maryland. And we, for the first time, were able to achieve a 30% MBE participation, as well as 10% veteran participation on the project, $12 million project.
Very good. Well needed as well. So thank you. Any questions on General Services? Second. Okay. We're all in favor. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Well, seriously.